I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today, VPR and Vermont PBS released the results of a new poll taking the pulse of Vermonters in the midst of an election year and a global pandemic. The poll was directed by Rich Clark, a professor of political science at Castleton University, who's worked with VPR on a number of polls over the years. And it was conducted by Braun Research, a New Jersey firm we've also worked with frequently. Pollsters interviewed 603 respondents in Vermont between the 15th and the 28th of July. They reached out to people on both landlines and cell phones. And you should know the poll has an overall margin of error of 4%. That will be different in different questions, but the overall margin of error is 4%. Questions included things about politics, race and racism, fiscal and emotional health, fears about contracting COVID-19, and whether schools should reopen for in-person learning in September. You can pore over all the results yourself at vpr.org. And for most of the hour on Vermont Edition, we're going to focus on what Vermonters are saying about their personal finances and their mental well-being. We would love for you to chime in on that. If you'd actually like to answer the poll questions in your response to us, you can focus on these questions. One, how much of a threat, if any, is the COVID-19 outbreak for your personal financial situation? Here's another one from the poll. Which statement more closely matches your point of view? A, that the state of Vermont will open too quickly, risking greater harm to public health than necessary? Or B, that the state will not open quickly enough, risking greater harm to the economy than necessary? And then there are also questions about your emotional well-being and mental health, including since the pandemic began, have you experienced trouble sleeping, increased anxiety, loneliness, or depression? So you can tell us what you think about those questions and how you would answer them. But before we go deep into them, let's get some of the highlights of the overall poll results with Rich Clark, who, as I mentioned, oversaw the poll. Nice to talk with you again, Rich. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon.
So could you talk a little bit? I know VPR and Vermont PBS came up with the questions, and I wasn't involved this time in crafting the questions, but you also get involved in how questions are actually written because that can affect the answers. What would you say about the types of issues that we're trying to illuminate here in this poll?
Well, we were thinking about broad issues, mostly focused around COVID-19, of course, and race, as you mentioned earlier, and questions that pertain to the public. So not a lot of real nitty-gritty questions or questions that are going to only pertain to a certain segment of the population.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about politics because this is still an election year, and often polls at this time of year in an election year are focusing on horse race politics. Now, most of the Vermont PBS and VPR poll did not actually focus on horse race politics. It really focused on issues. But it's interesting to note some of the answers, for example, in the overall assessment of how Vermonters feel Governor Scott is doing in response to the coronavirus. Can you take us through some of those, Rich?
Sure. Well, we didn't ask a general approval question. We've seen those from Morning Consult and some other organizations, and we know Governor Scott has had pretty strong overall approval levels. But we asked specifically about approval of his job managing the COVID-19 pandemic and his job handling issues related to race in Vermont. And on both of those, if I were to not know anything about Vermont politics and just look at the party breakdown, I would assume Phil Scott is our Democratic governor. In both cases, Democrats give Governor Scott higher approval ratings than do Republicans. And when it comes to his handling of COVID-19, by a strong margin, 94% of Democrats approve of Scott's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, it's remarkable to see those numbers when we look at, and as you said, it's not overall approval of Phil Scott as a governor, but overall approval massive approval, it would appear, on how the governor has handled the COVID-19 pandemic and Rich, as you said, interesting to dig down and to separate the results by party affiliation, which Vermonters who want to dig into these results can do. You can go to vpr.org, you'll see the poll, and you'll see the overall respondents, but then there are ways that you can go deeper into sort of the tabs and appendices to figure out the different sort of demographic answers.
That's right. While we were in the field, though, we were asked about the approval of the pandemic. And while we were in the field, Governor Scott made a big policy change in that he issued the mandate. Now, it didn't start until August 1st, but it was a Friday of the 24th while we were in the field that he made that statement. And we actually saw from that point, if we segment our sample prior to the announcement and after the announcement, we saw a shift in his approval ratings around COVID-19, and actually went down some, primarily because of Republican disaffection.
So the Republican disaffection, you're not necessarily attributing, you can't attribute it specifically to the announcement of a mask mandate. However, no. You can attribute it to the time that people were asked. And once the announcement of an impending mandate had come forward, Republican respondents were less likely to approve of Phil Scott's handling of COVID-19. Yes, that's what you're saying.
You said it much better than I could. Thank you.
Well, sometimes you need it said at least for my brain, I need it said two different ways. And then it's like I can triangulate and be like, oh, now I get it.
Right. And as you said, you know, I mean, I'm a social scientist, but it's not definitive proof that this is reaction to the announcement. But by segmenting there, we do see a difference.
And this was question five in the poll. Question five said, would you support or oppose a statewide mandate to require wearing face masks in public? Again, when the questions were crafted and when the field work was started, there had been no announcement of a mandate.
Right.
Overall, respondents, 76% said they support a statewide mandate, 22% oppose a statewide mandate, and 2% said they weren't sure or had no opinion. You know, in one of the press conferences prior to the beginning of the mandate actually going into effect, Governor Scott was asked if he had sort of done the political calculus before coming out with a mandate. And he said, oh, I think it wasn't a good move for me to come out with a mandate just days before a primary, but I did it anyway. And it struck me that it was interesting to think about whether or not that's true for a governor who needs some cross-party support, especially a Republican governor, to be able to need cross-party support in order to be reelected. The idea that Democrats might support a mandate and reward him for that seemed like a political calculus that could actually work in his favor. Now, you know,
but go
ahead.
He does have a primary challenge, and he's right in that Republicans, by a small margin, were opposed to the mask mandates. And those are the voters who are going to have the first look at Governor Scott in the August 11th primary.
That's right. It is within his party, within those who are voting in the Republican primary, who would be determining
right.
whether he is the candidate. There were also questions that were specific to COVID-19 and to ideas about how Vermonters feel about whether the state is opening up too quickly or not. I mentioned that question that Vermonters can respond to if they want to join this conversation. This question of, you know, are you more worried that the state is opening too fast and risking public health, or that it might not open fast enough, risking economic health, which, as we know, can also be a public health issue. How that was obviously a very carefully crafted question, you know, so take me through that.
Well, we tried to mirror the conversation and the debate that was happening in the general public, whether we were opening too quickly. And the words "too quickly" actually are the ones that resonate, I think, through a lot of the reporting. And again, we see that the concern is not all that different from what was seen in a lot of the national polls about opening too just the concern for opening too quickly, even while our level of positive COVIDs in Vermont per capita was much smaller than the rest of the country.
Yeah, on the question of which statement more closely matches your view, that the state of Vermont will open too quickly or that it won't open quickly enough, 56% of respondents say the one that matches their view more closely is that the state will open too quickly. 26%, so you know half that amount, say they're more closely aligned with the statement that the state will not open quickly enough. And 14% said neither statement really applies to them. What do you think is at the heart of that 14%, Rich?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with people who are ambivalent about the situation. And in a lot of the polling we do, and in fact, all the polling I've done for VPR, we're very soft at pushing people to extremes. We want to measure opinion. We don't want to create opinion. So when they hem and haw and they fall in neither, we don't probe them. Hmm. We don't push them to say, we don't actually go back in and say, well, which one is more closely? So we have a lot of, you'll notice our don't knows and not sures are often higher than you'll see in a lot of national polls.
So is that just a methodology of conducting the poll that in the VPR polls, you've been specifically instructed not to push hard to get people into one category or another, but in some polls there may be more of a directive to push harder?
Yeah, it's what we call house effects. Different organizations choose whether to probe or not to probe hard.
Richard's calling in from West Fairley. Hi, Richard. You have a reaction to the poll?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, Jane. I just wanted to make a quick comment about Governor Scott's response. I think he's done an awesome job. I don't think he's been opening up too quickly. I don't think he pushed the masks, one way or the other. I think he's been doing a good job with that as well. But it disturbed, and he's also kept politics out of it, which I thought was quite important. And to see his Republican rivals make statements that are totally wrong about the virus and how he's handled it is just wrong. I don't think that should be happening. But I think he's done a very good job, and I will take my comment off here.
Richard, could I ask you a question before you go?
Sure.
If you don't mind sharing, do you have a party affiliation? Do you generally consider yourself somebody who votes with the Republicans or the Democrats or otherwise?
I'm an independent, but I usually lean Democrat.
Got it. Richard, thanks. I appreciate your perspective and how you see it. Rich Clark, I want to ask about a couple other questions as we're just trying to go through some of the highlights for people who haven't looked at the poll yet. One of the things that we asked was, given the current state of the pandemic, do you favor or oppose reopening K through 12 schools this coming fall? 47% of respondents favor reopening K through 12 schools, 42% oppose, 11% were not sure or didn't have an opinion, and 1% of respondents refused to answer that question. Again, this polling was conducted between the 15th and the 28th, I think, of July. This question in particular is one that strikes me as something that could change a lot depending mm-hmm. on when you're asked that question.
Absolutely. And, you know, we like to talk about the fact that any poll is just a snapshot, right? But when you're in the poll for a couple of weeks, it's a blurry snapshot, you know, it's a long it's a slow shutter speed, really, right? And a lot changes over the course of that. I think we're seeing the division in the you know, ambivalence, I think, among the public about these sorts of questions. And when you look here, there's not a lot. I mean, there is a party difference, whereas Republicans are much more likely to say they favor opening the schools. But, you know, other than that, there's not a lot of differences across many other demographics.
Another question was, given the current state of the pandemic, do you favor or oppose Vermont universities and colleges letting students come back to campus? Slightly more respondents oppose letting students come back than favor it. So 44% of respondents favor bringing college students back or letting them come back. 50% say they oppose it. And a smaller number than in the K through 12 schools didn't have an opinion on that. Only 6% didn't have an opinion. But I'd love to pair that, Rich, with the question about whether or not people are worried about people coming from out of state. And bringing the virus in. This was question number 6. To what extent are you concerned about people from out of state coming to Vermont who may spread the virus? 43% of people say they're very concerned about this, and 34% say they're somewhat confused. So that's close to 80% of respondents saying they are very or somewhat concerned about people coming in from out of state spreading the virus in Vermont. That's a very high number.
Yeah, I agree. And while it does seem that the attitudes about having college students come back would be closely tied to this, there are a lot of differences in how people responded. For example, Democrats expressed higher concern for people coming from out of state, and yet they were also more. I'm sorry, I've got that wrong. I was going to say they're more like they are also more likely to favor the they are less likely to favor the opening of the college campuses.
I know what you're saying.
That is consistent. Yeah.
So Democrats are more likely to say they're concerned about people coming from out of state spreading the virus, and they're also more likely to say that they don't think that students should return to college campuses. So there's consistency in that approach.
Exactly.
But it's interesting because, I think there may be some differences just in how people think about people, tourists coming in, people coming in, whether or not they're following quarantining from out of state. There may be a difference in how you perceive sort of regular folks coming in from out of state versus college students, because there may be more oversight on a college campus. And so I find that answer interesting to look at, to try to tease apart where that difference might come from, because we know college campuses, first of all, colleges are very concerned about this, obviously, for the health and well-being of their students and their faculty and staff, but also for their ability to remain open. And college students are going to have to sign pledges, health pledges, that come with some pretty severe penalties if you don't follow them, at least in theory. You could be kicked out of school if you don't follow the health policy of your campus. There is not so much enforcement of tourists who are coming into the state.
That's right. And while you're right there, we have data now. So these are all questions that could be teased out from the data that we have, although we don't have that information right in front of us.
All right. So one of the other things that we've asked people is, how much of a threat, if any, is the COVID-19 outbreak for your personal financial situation? About a quarter of respondents say COVID-19 is a major threat to their personal finances. Almost half say it's a minor threat. And then 30% say it's no threat at all. Are there any interesting demographic pieces of that we should know about?
Well, what we don't have there in the breakdowns as the data down by household income. We also asked people what they did with the stimulus money that came in. And looking at that by household income, the people who are in households that made $40,000 or less, two-thirds of them said they use that money to cover expenses. So that $1,200 is going right back into the economy. In other words, these are people who needed the money. So we have like everybody has said, that the divisions and the problems that exist in society are really exacerbated by the COVID pandemic, that people who are struggling more. And there are a number of people, myself included, knock on wood, that were able to continue working from home and didn't have a major disruption in household finances. I think we're seeing a bit of a class difference in that it shows up throughout Vermont.
And Rich, one of the way the questions were phrased basically asked people to think about their household expenses and their household finances. But I would be interested, too, to see how Vermonters compare to what we're hearing nationally about women being much more negatively impacted financially and in many cases emotionally because of pressures related to the COVID-19 pandemic and the recession.
Well, I think that's right. When we asked about the differences there, your financial situation, we don't see much of a difference between men and women in this particular poll. But all the economic data are showing us that unlike many of the past recessions, that this one has hit women greater. So why it's not showing up here, I'm not sure. But we have to remember that many people live in a household and they're thinking of these things, even though one might be affected, the spouse or partner might not be.
Rich, before we let you go, could we talk as well about questions that were relating to race and racism and law enforcement? And that, you know, there are other financial questions that listeners should go to the poll results at vpr.org if you want to look deeper at them. But one of the questions that we asked people was, how much trust and confidence do you have in your local law enforcement? This includes state and local police as well as county sheriffs. More than half of the respondents said they either have a great deal of confidence or quite a lot of confidence in local law enforcement. How do you think that compares to what we're seeing nationally?
Well, I don't have a comparable national comparison, but one of the things we have seen nationally is that there's a large partisan difference in confidence and trust and confidence in the police, and that showed up in our poll. That mirrored that, and it's a major difference where, you know, when we look at just the extreme response, a great deal of confidence, 60% of Republicans express a great deal of confidence and only 23% of Democrats. We also noticed nationally a big difference based, you know, where people of color are less likely to express a great deal of confidence. While we did ask the question, we don't have a response sample large enough of people of color in our poll to break that out.
Well, it's also interesting. One of the questions that we asked was, just your best guess, what percentage of Vermonters do you think identify as non-white? And people basically overestimated how many Vermonters identify as non-white. So of the respondents, typically the mean was they think 16 or 17% of Vermonters probably identify as non-white. That's not what census data shows us.
No, census data would show us that it's about 7.4% of Vermonters. What's interesting is that the most diverse county in Vermont, Chittenden County, actually had the lowest estimate of all the regions. And we see also that the closest to the census figures comes with education, so that people with a bachelor's or degree or beyond were more likely to or come closer to the census figure than people with lower levels of education.
Listeners, I invite you to really dig into this report and the polling, and these questions about race and racism are really interesting. You know, we were talking about law enforcement, and the majority of respondents support local law enforcement, but close to half of respondents also say they think that police regularly or occasionally discriminate against people of color. So it's going to be interesting to sort of tease apart those responses. And more than half of respondents think that racism is a big or somewhat of a problem in the state of Vermont. 66% of respondents say they support the Black Lives Matter movement. 25% say they oppose it. So really interesting data coming out of this poll. I hope other reporters will also be looking into this. We know VPR and Vermont PBS is doing extensive reporting on it. And Rich Clark, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for all your work on this poll and for helping walk us through it.
It's my pleasure. You have a great afternoon.
You too. Rich Clark is a professor of political science at Castleton University and the director of the August 2020 VPR Vermont PBS poll. For the rest of the hour, we want to talk about what respondents have been telling us about their financial and emotional well-being. And we invite you to join this conversation as well. How have you been coping with the stress of the pandemic and the recession? Have you experienced increased anxiety, trouble sleeping, loneliness? Does the economic situation related to COVID-19 threaten your finances? At least in terms of respondents, well over half say COVID-19 is a major or a minor threat to their personal financial situation. 30% say COVID-19 is no threat at all. And when we look at questions about how people are experiencing anxiety and depression, it's pretty striking. 30% of people say they have experienced trouble sleeping since the pandemic began. 50% have increased anxiety, self-reported increased anxiety. And a quarter of respondents say they're experiencing depression. In terms of loneliness, we've talked about this before with the potential isolation. 30% of people say they have experienced loneliness since the pandemic began, although 70% say they haven't. So what does that mean to you? Does that suggest that it's all very dependent on your personal situation? Or do you find that connectivity in Vermont communities can also play a role in whether or not you experience loneliness, regardless of whether you live with other people or don't? We're joined now by Erin Stewart, Chief of Psychology at Champlain Valley Physicians Hospital. She's also a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at UVM's Larner College of Medicine. Erin Stewart, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
We also wanted to put the Vermont experience into a more national context, and here to help us with that is Liz Hamill. Liz is Vice President and Director of Public Opinion and Survey Research for the Kaiser Family Foundation. Liz, thank you very much for joining us today as well.
Glad to be with you.
Liz and Erin, you've both looked over the results of this poll. Erin, what do you think sort of overarching idea or feeling about what you're seeing from Vermont respondents in regards to loneliness and anxiety and depression and how the COVID-19 pandemic and everything that's swirling around it is affecting our emotional well-being?
So I was really happy to see that we were doing a poll, because what I've seen is a real spike in worry and fear and sadness, and it was reflected in the numbers. And what I know is that our stress response is built to respond to short stressors. That's what we're built to do really well. And the COVID-19 pandemic, along with the social justice issues around us, have built a lasting and longitudinal threat, a long-term worry. And we're not as good at doing that as humans. And we're not accustomed to it, and we're not built for it. And so it's asking all of us to do things that we have to stretch outside our coping mechanisms and our comfort zone to do well. And so what I saw in the numbers is that people are feeling a lot of stress, and that comes out differently for everyone. Some people feel that as anger or fear or sadness. Some people can't sleep, they can't eat. It looks differently in all of the people that I interact with. So I saw that in the numbers.
So you felt the numbers accurately reflected what you've sort of been anecdotally experiencing?
I do. And in fact, I would say that because there's self-report and there's stigma associated with reporting mental health symptoms still, unfortunately, that it might be even an underrepresentation of what people are feeling. Because it's hard to say that it's hard to cope with something that is going on around you that you can't control. So I did see what I have been seeing in the numbers, and even maybe a little bit less than what I've been seeing.
Yeah, you know, I think the phrasing of the questions, as with every poll, are really interesting, because the anxiety question is the one where most respondents said yes. Yes, I've been experiencing increased anxiety. 49% of respondents said yes. But that increased anxiety is directly related to the pandemic. You know, have you been experiencing increased anxiety since the COVID-19 pandemic began? Whereas the other questions, have you experienced trouble sleeping? Have you experienced loneliness? Didn't necessarily allow respondents to say what their baseline is. You know, maybe you're already experiencing depression, or maybe you're already experiencing loneliness. So this doesn't necessarily measure how many feel like they're experiencing an increase in loneliness that's related to the COVID-19 pandemic. And I wonder if that also then affects how people answer, Erin.
Maybe so. And also, I would say that there has been more fear rather than sadness that I've seen. And our stress response fires when we are faced with a new situation, a shocking situation, a confusing situation. Our limbic system, our stress response, calms when we are in a familiar situation. So even if that familiar situation is bad, familiar feels better than new and different. And anxiety and worry is just the symptom of facing something that no one knows, facing the unknown. Anxiety is that symptom. And occasionally, you know, people can feel sad and lonely and have a hard time sleeping because of the unknown, but the usual response is hypervigilance and paranoia and worry and fear. And we get all of that information through our sensory outlets, taste, touch, smell, you know, all of those ways that we gather information give us the sense of whether we're safe or not. And we have received so much information recently about the unknown and what is coming and what could come and what is here. And that will, what I've seen is that directly relates to how anxious and worried people are feeling.
Hmm. Liz Hamill, you know, you look at a lot of these issues as well from a broader perspective, a more national perspective. How would you situate what we're seeing in Vermont in the national context?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, I'm so glad that you're doing state-level polling. We've been doing national polling on the issue since March, but we know how different the situation is in different states and different communities, so it's great to have these state-level polls to compare to. We have slightly different question wording, but have been asking about mental health impacts. And I would say the results nationally are really consistent with what you're seeing in Vermont. It also really resonated when Aaron talked about the long-term stress when you're forced to deal with these things over a period of time. So we've been tracking a question about whether people feel that worry and stress related to the pandemic has had a negative impact on their mental health. Back in March, it was about a third of the public that said, yes, it's had a negative impact. But in our latest poll in July, it was 53% felt that their mental health had been negatively impacted. And so you kind of see over time how the continued stress of dealing with something like this really increases how people feel their mental health is being affected.
Do you see connections between how people respond generally, Liz, to the idea of whether COVID-19 is a personal financial stressor to how that then affects their anxiety? I mean, clearly, if you're worried about your finances, you're probably more likely to be anxious. But I imagine also people who are not necessarily concerned about finances may also be experiencing increased anxiety.
Yeah, certainly we saw large shares across the board reporting that they were having negative impacts, but it really was the groups that were the most likely to say that their mental health was suffering were the same people that said they've had difficulty affording household expenses due to coronavirus. And so, you know, it was 53% overall said they had a negative impact on their mental health, but it was 71% among those who were having problems affording their household expenses. So you can see that those financial problems and those stress and mental health problems really interplay with each other.
I think your latest reporting showed that 4 in 10 are saying they're struggling to afford basic necessities or they're falling behind in their monthly bills.
Yes. Yeah. And that includes things like paying their credit card bills, paying for health insurance or medical bills, problems paying for food, rent, utilities. So basically 4 in 10 overall were saying that they had trouble affording at least one of these things.
And you've also polled people on what they think the future holds, right, Liz, that a lot of people think that we have not yet hit the worst.
Yeah, it was interesting because we've been tracking that since early April. And, you know, in April and May, we saw that sort of come down with more people saying, no, the worst is behind us, and fewer saying the worst is yet to come. But in July, as we saw cases continuing to tick up across the country, we found 6 in 10 saying the worst of the pandemic is yet to come and just 20% saying, no, the worst is behind us.
Aaron Stewart, that kind of correlates with what you're saying about people being able to withstand a short-term stressor that, you know, humans are built for that. And, you know, when we thought in March and April that we're going into a shutdown, but if we all band together, this will be over, schools will be back in session by, you know, late April, that we sort of had this ability to maybe emotionally withstand that stressor at the time. And now that it's stretching on and on, maybe our sense of whether, you know, we're going to get through this intact is really fraying.
Yes, and I would say that those, what you're describing right there is what gives people the sense of fatigue and exhaustion. Because when you overtax your emotional system by feeling a lot for a long period of time, And we can't insert the coping strategies that we always use, because one of the harshest parts of COVID-19 is at the same time it scared everybody and made everybody sad, it also took away a lot of the coping strategies that people use to cope with those feelings. And so when you elongate a high amount of feelings for a long period of time, it taxes our system and makes us tired and fatigued, makes us feel depleted, like we don't have any more resources, which is the way our body is supposed to work. We're supposed to extend our resources under threat and stress real quickly and then replenish them. And there has been such an up and down and round that people have not been able to rejuvenate or replenish because they don't have access to a break or their coping strategies that always worked.
We were talking a little bit about fear and anxiety and how Vermont fits into the national picture. And Liz Hamill, I think it's really interesting to look at the sort of anxiety that people are feeling about the coronavirus pandemic and how they feel it might affect their personal finances. And thinking about Vermont in the national context, you know, Vermont is a rural state. We're one of the most rural states in the nation, according to that federal definition. So it can be sometimes difficult to feel connectivity, to feel like you you have a social safety net. But our government safety net is much more robust than it is in many other states in the nation. Vermont usually has better health outcomes, a healthier population than many states in the nation. But we also see significant rates of suicide and depression, which may be partly related to our rural nature. So when you look at the Vermont results in the context of Vermont's sort of demographic and social picture, does it make sense to you?
I think all of those things that you pointed out all factor into the different ways that, the pandemic is affecting people emotionally. Whether you live in a crowded city and you have fear about going out and interacting with other people and getting exposed to the virus, or you live in a rural area and you have that lack of social connection, both of those can be ways that can contribute to people's worry and stress.
What about in terms of the health impacts of anxiety? Aaron, what should we be aware of? You know, as we look at how many people are experiencing stress and anxiety, that can have some real repercussions on your health.
Yeah, it can have a lot of repercussions on your physical health. It also, anxiety and worry is it's a little bit contagious in communities. And so we know that it can affect a family system. It can affect neighborhoods and communities, organizations. And so it can not only affect each individual in the way that it affects them, which is physical, emotional. It can also affect all of the organizations and systems that surround those individuals. And so it's really important. I think it's really important to acknowledge that no one is alone in their worry or fear or sadness, that we don't want anyone to feel alone, because a lot of people are struggling and they may struggle silently, but that struggle impacts everyone else. So it's really important to acknowledge that this is hard for everyone. It's a large adjustment. It's something that people weren't prepared for. It's the unknown. And there are solutions and strategies for dealing with that anxiety and worry, but it's real.
This poll was conducted with adults, but I would be really curious to know how it tracks for younger people. And it's really difficult to poll very young children, but Vermont does a youth risk behavior survey to check in on, young people, teenagers mostly, and to see how they're doing, what kinds of reports of drug use are up or down in Vermont youth, but also questions about anxiety and depression and mental health. And I really wonder, Aaron, what you think we might be experiencing in terms of anxiety, sleeplessness, concern, fear, if we were to poll young people.
I'm worried about our young people and especially our adolescents. The younger children that I've been around have some resiliency factors in that they don't understand some of the weight of what's going on. They're understanding snippets, but our preteens and adolescents are absorbing what they hear and absorbing the feelings that the adults around them are having. And they also don't have as many coping strategies or impulse control or consequential thinking. They don't have some of the tools that adults have in order to cope. And that's not to say that adults always have the tools, but I am worried about our teens. I have seen teens that had very stable lives prior to COVID, very unidentifiable in terms of mental health, and are really, really, really struggling at this point. And so I think it's an important question, and I think we have to be careful about what we're putting out there and also be consistently checking in with our teens and our adolescents about how they're doing and reflecting on how the systems around them are doing.
Liz Hamill, what do you think about the question of how young people are doing? And, you know, often polls then get used to inform policy or to inform, you know, reporting, and without being able to have this kind of granular information about young people in the United States, are we missing perhaps some of the story and some of the real focus that needs to be placed on that part of our population?
Yeah, we haven't done any polling actually of children, but we did in our most recent poll look at an oversample of parents to find out how they were feeling about school reopening. And we did find that, you know, parents had a lot of worries in both scenarios, both worries about what could happen if schools reopen and exposure to the virus and someone in their family getting sick, but also worries about what happens if schools don't reopen. And to speak to the concerns about mental health of children, the number one concern for parents if schools don't reopen is their child falling behind on their emotional and social development. So they were concerned about academics as well. But for parents, the number one thing was being worried that their child would not have those interactions with peers and not have those emotional supports. And so, you know, while I can't speak from the children's perspective, I can say that this is something that parents are definitely concerned about.
Question 10 in our poll was, given the current state of the pandemic, do you favor or oppose reopening K through 12 schools this coming fall? And it's fairly evenly split. 47% of respondents favor reopening schools, and 42% oppose reopening schools. Rich Clark told us that there are some differences among party affiliation, that people who identify as Republicans are more likely to favor reopening schools. People who identify as Democrats are more likely to oppose reopening schools. But Liz, regardless of where respondents fall on that question, it sounds like, and I think we can likely assume, that people are stressed about either option and both options and no options, that there's nothing for parents that feels like it is absolutely the right choice that's going to make them whole and not fill them with fear and, you know, allow them to continue their jobs. I mean, whether you oppose or favor reopening schools doesn't necessarily mean that your answer then jives with how secure you feel in your financial or emotional well-being and future.
Yeah, this was one area where the national poll results are somewhat different than the Vermont results. I think you had an even split in Vermont between wanting to reopen and not reopen schools. We asked a similar question that was about whether it's better to open schools sooner or better to open them later. And we found more people saying it's better to open them later. That was about a 2-to-1. So 63% said open them later, 32% said open them sooner. But we did find that same partisan split that you're talking about nationally, with Democrats wanting to wait and Republicans wanting to reopen the schools sooner. But yeah, it's true. When we dug down into those worries for parents, it really was both scenarios that parents were worried about, which kind of reflects the uncertainty and how the stress, regardless of where you fall on school reopening, it can be affecting your level of worry and your mental health.
Yeah, and I'm interested in that difference between the national ideas around schools reopening and the Vermont poll results around schools reopening. interesting to think of it in the context of Vermont being the state that has the lowest overall number of cases. And also, I think we're the lowest or the second lowest, I think the lowest now, on the per capita number of cases, that we have the lowest positivity rate and the lowest actual rate of cases in the nation right now. And so that may have some impact on whether people think it may be safe to return to school or not. Aaron, you know, before we end, advice to people who are looking at these results and thinking of their own lives, and we're all trying to figure out how to get through this, but also how to address mental health issues that may be emerging and continuing?
Sure. So the first is that therapy is more accessible now than it ever has been because of teletherapy and insurance companies allowing that. The second is, I always encourage people to create pleasurable sensory experiences, because that balances out some of the sensory information that's scary. And then the last thing I would say is that we are always afraid of the unknown and always grieving what has been lost. And so the only real calm and soothing place that we can be in is in this present moment. So we're doing a lot of mindfulness with people to keep them in this moment, because that's the safest place to be for everybody when they don't know what's coming down the pike and they've lost what they had before. So those are the three things that I would say.
Well, I really appreciate that. I'm going to think a lot about trying to stay present, stay in the moment, and not get out over my skis when it comes to worry about the future. Thank you for that. That's Aaron Stewart. She's chief of psychology at the UVM Health Network's Champlain Valley Physicians Hospital and a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at UVM's Larner College of Medicine. Aaron, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And Liz Hamill is vice president and director of public opinion and survey research for the Kaiser Family Foundation. Liz, what a pleasure to have you. Thank you for giving us this national context.
Thank you.
Listeners, if you'd like to dig deeper into the poll, you can find the results at vpr.org. We have stories on VPR all week, and so you're going to hear a lot about this. And this is just the second of three polls that VPR and Vermont PBS are preparing this election year. So stay tuned.